Welcome to a new series on Spanish history brought to you by Brian Spain Domain, in which we are going to feature the lives of the many women who have figured prominently in Spanish history and yet nowadays rarely get the attention that they deserve. They have achieved great things and contributed greatly to this country, but all too often these individuals get relegated to getting streets named after them and a little bit more than that. And it's a shame because there is so much more to talk about. Now, today we are going to talk about a woman who actually does have a street named after her that is quite familiar to most people in Madrid. It's a street that goes from the Castellana all the way up to Avenida de America. I am talking about the street called María de Molina, no less. And it turns out that this was one of the great Spanish queens of the Middle Ages. In fact, as some people describe her, she wasn't queen just once, but three times. She was a significant figure in Spanish history, known primarily for her role as queen consort of Castile and León, through her marriage to Sancho IV of Castile, and later served as regent for her son Ferdinand IV and her grandson Alfonso XI. Her ability to navigate political turmoil and her dedication to the crown earned her recognition as one of the most influential queens in Spanish history. But, as I just mentioned, so few people know about her. So that's why we're here to tell you a little bit more. Now, to understand this story, we have to backtrack a little to the reign of the great Alfonso X, King Alfonso X, Alfonso the Wise, or sometimes it's translated as Alfonso the Learned. It would seem that the second nickname is probably more accurate. He was a scholarly monarch, a lover of arts, a promoter of higher education, a writer and a poet, and the founder of a famous translating school in Toledo. He also promulgated the famous Seven Partidas, which was a seven-part governing code, almost like a very basic constitution, and it is one of the most influential of its time. In fact, Alfonso X is honored in the American Capitol building as being one of the contributors to the government and democratic format that we have in the United States to this day. So his influence has gone a long way. But getting back to our story here, for all the progress during much of his reign, things began to fall apart at the end when his son Fernando died in a place called Ciudad Real in 1275. The problem was that, in addition to his son dying, which is never a good thing, it opened up a succession crisis because, according to Castilian tradition, the next son in line, Sancho, should become the heir. But we also had this other tradition which argued in favor of Fernando's son, the grandson, Alfonso. Alfonso de la Cerda. Alfonso X's wife, Violante, was in favor of the grandson and convinced Alfonso to name little Alfonso to be next in line. But Sancho didn't give in and had a lot of support from most of Castile. Now, Sancho fell in love and married a woman named Maria de Molina. She is our star of this podcast. Maria was born Maria Alfonso de Meneses. She was born in Valladolid in 1264. She was the daughter of an infante or prince, an infante called Alfonso de Molina, son of King Alfonso IX, and his wife, Queen Berenguela. We will actually talk about her at a different time. Maria herself came into this world as the daughter of Infante Alfonso and his third wife. Now, I apologize for all the Alfonsos I'm mentioning. It can really be annoying and distressing part of learning Spanish history, so I completely understand. I'm trying to simplify this as much as possible, and even so, we've now mentioned three or four different Alfonsos. But anyway, Maria was the son of one of these Alfonsos. The important thing to remember is that she is a member of nobility, of high society. I will even dare to say, sort of a distant family member of royalty. So it should come as no surprise that she and Sancho would meet at some point, and most likely in King Alfonso X's court. They married in 1282. Their marriage was very controversial for two reasons. One is that they were blood relatives. They were first cousins once removed. So for the union to be valid, the Pope had to give them the green light, which he was hesitant to do at first. And on top of that, and here's the second reason, Sancho was originally engaged to another woman through the way these things were done back then. The parents usually arranged marriage with other royal families if they could. But nothing official had come of it, so he felt was free to marry whom the person he wanted to, which was sort of an unusual thing at that time. All the same, this was sort of a very scandalous act for him to end up marrying Maria. It went against what was expected. And on top of that, once they had children, that only made matters worse, and their children were considered illegitimate because the marriage hadn't been made official by the church or the Pope, even though I guess they did get married at a church. Anyway, Sancho took control of Castile and immediately triggered an internal conflict since he had not respected Alfonso X, his father's wishes. Instead, he went to Toledo and was crowned, and many members of Castilian nobility, as well as the King of Aragon, supported his rival, Alfonso de la Cerda, and challenged Sancho, and a civil war ensued. After that was settled, another challenge came from another brother of his called Juan of Castile, who also claimed to be the rightful heir. That too was settled before Sancho passed away. Now, Sancho IV's reign, which went from 1284 to 1295, it wasn't a very long one. During that period, Maria de Molina was his consort, as we were saying. She was the queen, and she played a significant role in the kingdom's affairs. She was a key advisor to Sancho IV and exercised considerable power. Maria and Sancho IV were known for their close working relationship, with the queen being a valued sort of advisor and co-ruler. This was unusual for this time, and it highlighted her intellect and Sancho's recognition of her abilities. Obviously, he had a lot of faith in her. These were times when women did not traditionally play an important role in politics. It was a man's world, as James Brown would say, and it required a very special profile of woman to make it possible. And it would appear that Maria de Molina met all those requirements. Now, when Sancho IV died in 1295, Maria became the sole regent for her son, Fernando, who had become now Fernando IV, the king. And the problem was he was too young to rule. He was only 9 years old at the time. Now, if her husband Sancho had had a tough time trying to hold on to power, it became twice as complicated because the king was a young boy, this Fernando, and his regent was a woman, which at the time would have been considered a vulnerable target for rivals. Maria also shared in part the regency with Sancho's uncle, Enrique the Senator, but she played the main role in guiding the kingdom. This period was marked by challenges to the throne and attempts to destabilize the kingdom. Challenges continued to come from Alfonso de la Cerda and Juan de Castilla, but Maria skillfully controlled the situation, the political landscape there, and she secured support for her son's rule through marriage alliances, gifts of territory, and shrewd political maneuvering. So she really knew how to work with people, even work with her rivals to get what she wanted. And she was able to sort of weave and dodge and manipulate and confront all these things at the same time. Depending on what was needed, she would adopt a different approach. One example of this is when she achieved the Treaty of Alcañices in 1297 with the King of Portugal. Now, the King of Portugal had been supporting her rivals for quite a long time, but in the end, She was able to establish a couple of important things with him. One, they established the border between the two countries, which had been sort of an issue for many, many years. And much of that border is still true to this day. And she also assured a marriage of her son Fernando to the princess of Portugal, Constance, and that would further tighten the ties between the two countries. Nevertheless, the number of struggles, battles, sieges, conspiracies, and betrayals is mind-boggling. Kings, countries, noblemen were constantly causing chaos in the kingdom in an attempt to bring further instability and possibly remove Maria and her son for good. It's stunning what a mess it is. It really was. I'm not going to get into all the details because it's really, really, really confusing. But some of the big names, as we mentioned before, Alfonso de Lacerda, and then you had Fernando de Lacerda, then you had another man named Juan Núñez de Lara, Diego López V of Haro, then, of course, as we mentioned before, the King of Portugal, the King of France, the King of Aragon. They were all getting involved. And then on top of that, you also had the Sultan of Granada in the south to deal with from time to time. These rivals would do just about anything to make Maria's life unbearable, and laying sieges to towns, claiming whole lordships, mustering armies to attack, and conspiring with foreign rulers. It was nuts, and it was really hard to bring it all together. There were so many individuals involved, so many changes, so many interests. It's incredible. At one time, they even did things like coin their own money with really cheap metals in the attempt to insert all these coins into circulation and devalue the currency of the country and to destabilize the economy. I mean, they were just doing anything they could. Anyway, eventually Maria built her own coalition, utilizing the Castilian courts. The courts would go around from city to city. She would have a more personal interest in the different families of the different cities. And in that way, she was able to sort of consolidate her authority and consolidate her power. As I said before, I will spare you all the details, but suffice it to say that she managed the situation masterfully. And then in the end, she successfully defended her son's right to the throne, solidifying his claim with the papal support from Pope Boniface VIII in 1301 when he approved the marriage between her and Sancho IV, even though Sancho was dead. But finally, that marriage was considered legitimate, and the children were considered legitimate. And so, therefore, Fernando IV's title was legitimate too. It was quite a game changer there. In 1302, I believe, Fernando was allowed to rule independently, which is what he did all the way up until 1312 when he died rather suddenly, a young man himself at the age of 26. So young, in fact, that his son, another Alfonso, the heir to the throne, was only 1 year old. Maria was getting on in years and not very enthusiastic about taking up the option again, but at the insistence of others, she decided to agree on becoming one of the regents for this Alfonso, this new Alfonso. She was joined by his mother, by Alfonso's mother, Constance, who was the wife of Fernando, his great uncle, Infante Juan of Castile, as the son of Alfonso X, and also the Infante Peter of Castile, who was another son of King Sancho IV. During this period, the regency of Alfonso XI, Maria de Molina played a crucial role in defending the interests of the kingdom and her grandson. In a period marked by political instability, yet once again, she was able to control things through her diplomatic skill and her influence over the Castilian councils. And she was managed to maintain stability and guarantee Alfonso XI's succession. Alfonso would go on to become one of the great kings in Spanish history, and he was off to a good start thanks to his grandmother. So, as we can see, Maria was a determined and resilient woman, very skilled negotiator, diplomatic, shrewd, brave, intelligent, a person who was admired even by her rivals. Maria died on July the 1st, 1321, in Valladolid. Her tomb is now located in the magnificent monastery in Burgos known as Las Huelgas. A highly recommendable visit if you are ever in that city. And anyway, that'll be all for this episode brought to you by Brian Spain Domain. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we hope you've learned a little bit about what this extraordinary woman did and contributed to Spain's history. Please feel free to leave us any questions or comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Amazon, and Castos, and you can check us out on our YouTube channel and subscribe there too. Or if you wish to support Brian Spain Domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the very best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. Our podcasts are free so that anyone can enjoy them, but we welcome listeners to support us if they wish. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.